The following program is suitable for all ages.
Buffoon. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffoon, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. I'm playing right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffoon 55. The John Buffoon Show.
Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Buffoon 55, a fast-paced look at Chicago Bears football. I'm your host, John Buffoon, and I'm coming to you live on Tuesday night, December 10th, over our Bears Barroom live channel on Mixlr.com. Every week, we analyze the Chicago Bears and add an in-depth look at their upcoming opponent. Here to help us break down the Green Bay Packers this week is Ryan Schlipp, host of the PackerNet podcast. Ryan's going to join us in just a bit, but first, I want to welcome my producer and moderator, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, that was a great win on Thursday against the Cowboys, and it's Packers week. How you feeling?
I mean, I'm feeling pretty, as good as I thought I would feel heading into this Packers game, considering they finally, you know, got a win over, I guess you could say, at least a better opponent than the Lions and the Giants.
It was a step up, yes. It's not the precipice, but, you know, it was a good building block.
At this point, it's all about the incremental progress, right?
Yeah, you can't really complain about it. If you're moving forward, that's good enough for me.
But you didn't fare as well as the Bears this weekend, John.
I knew you were going to bring this up. I'm playing a little hurt today. I went back to my hometown in Western Pennsylvania. I went hunting, and always be sure to check the ladders in the tree stand. We had a wooden ladder going up into the stand, and one of the rungs broke. I fell against a tree, and to show my everlasting girthiness, I actually knocked the tree down on the way. As I hit it, I uprooted a tree. So, I banged my ribs up a little bit after from the fall. But you know what? I got back up into a different tree, finished the day out. You know, no excuses. Play like a champion. I'm here. I'm ready to go. Hurts to breathe a little bit, but I'm ready to spit some fire.
Well, I'm glad you took the tree down with you.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Just like my Uncle Doug said in his opening rant we always play, if I'm going down, I'm bringing somebody down with me. So I brought the tree down with me.
Absolutely. And so, John, before we bring in our guest, I want to let our new listeners know how our show works. So we begin and end the show with five questions that you have 55 seconds to respond to. That's John's way of dedicating Buffoon 55 to Doug Buffoon, his uncle, who played 15 seasons for the Chicago Bears and wore number 55. So, John, let's get the first five in the books, and then we'll bring in your guest.
I'm ready.
So, John, let's start this round of our first B55 questions. Talk about the positives in Thursday's win over the Cowboys. I'm sure you need more than 55 seconds to point out everything you like, so let's compartmentalize. Let's start with the coaching staff. What did you like about Matt Nagy's strategic work against Jason Garrett? The clock is at 55 and go.
Well, there weren't too many times where the Bears tried to be the smartest people in the room. They found some things that were effective, and they kept going with it. We knew the linebacking core was going to be hurting for Dallas. We learned that on the show last week. And the Cowboys looked like they were trying to tackle a bunch of greased-up pigs on Thursday. They couldn't tackle anything. So the Bears got the ball to guys on swing passes, intermediate routes, in open space, and they basically just kept daring the Cowboys to tackle them for short gains, and they couldn't. We didn't see too many issues with clock management or trying to outsmart everyone on third and one plays. This was just a solid game from the top down, and credit has to be given to the coaching staff for that. They had their guys ready to play in a game that they absolutely had to have. I said this last week that we could be talking about the Bears' razor-thin playoff chances if they beat the Cowboys. And even though those chances narrowed greatly after Sunday night, we can still talk about how the Bears won a game against a team that is at least better than the Lions and the Giants.
And obviously, Mitchell Trubisky is the big talk of this game, which we're going to get to in a little bit. But Matt Nagy deserves a lot of credit for how he called the game, considering, you know, we've been honest and we've given it to him on the show about, you know, his play calling. And this felt like a game where Matt Nagy made a statement too. You know, like it's taken a lot longer than we would have liked, but you finally saw Nagy kind of like in the swing of things too as a play caller.
It looked different and it looked better, and I hope that continues.
Let's hope so. So moving over to the offense, over 330 yards of total offense, almost 5 more minutes of possession. Those are just a couple of things on the plus column for Trubisky and this offense. So can you give me your highlights and do it in 55 seconds? Take it away.
I thought Trubisky looked as good as he has all season, and it started with his decision-making. We talk a lot about how he has issues zeroing in on one guy and just kind of forcing it. Well, he still had quick decision-making last Thursday, but it was the right kind of decision-making. He went through a few reads, and when it wasn't there, guess what? He used his legs, 63 yards rushing and a touchdown. Outside of that bad interception, he also threw the ball really well. Some crazy accurate tosses between defenders that were thrown with a ton of confidence. This looked like the guy that was very effective last year. This looked like the offense that was very effective last year. I don't know if something clicked with the coaching staff or something clicked with Mitch where he just got rid of that deer in the headlight look and said, screw it, people are going to crap on me no matter what. I might as well go out there and play some sandlot ball. Because it is true, even Yahoo Sports tweeted out a joke about Trubisky. Even after this stretch of success, he is always going to be a punchline for some people. So maybe he's just come to grips with that and he's just going to keep playing his game.
I mean, like you said, Trubisky looked the best that he has all season. You know, it was like a switch was flipped. You know, he remembered that, you know, his legs are a weapon and he plays his best when he's using his mobility, you know, and it was everything. I mean, it was the mobility. It was those conviction throws, the accuracy, the decision making, a big one. That's been Trubisky's biggest weakness, I think we can agree. And just like the confidence, how it affected the rest of the offense. And then you had David Montgomery, the offensive line, the receivers. I mean, everything was really flowing on the offense.
He was a lot less hesitant in this game. And when things weren't there, he took off. And that's what makes him dangerous. We saw a couple times, actually a good amount of times throughout the year, where there was times where he had a Mack truck size hole to run through and he kind of just didn't know what to do. And then he either took a sack or threw a bad throw to somebody. But now he just took off. He had a hell of a game.
And I think we talked about it last week. Like, it's more like a pride thing where, like, he felt like, you know, he was lesser of a quarterback because he was using his legs and taking off when he had that open field, you know, but it's not. It's a strength of his game.
Yeah, tell that to Lamar Jackson. See what happens.
Absolutely. So switching over to the other side of the ball, the Bears defense began the game by allowing the Cowboys to march right on down the field, 75 yards for a touchdown. But after that, the team settled in, despite an early game injury to linebacker Roquan Smith, who is now out for the year. So, John, give me your evaluation of the defense, and I'm starting the clock now. Go.
The first drive for the Bears defense in the last 2 weeks haven't really been all that great, but they do eventually settle down. I thought they had guys flying all over the field. I thought Kevin Pierre-Lewis played well. Kevin Tolliver stepped in and played pretty well. If you just look at the box score, you'll see that Dak did throw for 334 yards. Zeke had 2 touchdowns. But that really isn't indicative of the night of the Bears' defense. They kept the league passing leader in check. They held their big money running back to under 100 yards. They did get some pressure on the quarterback, and they made him look uncomfortable at times. So about halfway through the game, I lost the feeling that Dallas was going to start busting off big chunk plays. That never really did come to fruition. I've been banging the drum for the defense all year, and I know that that isn't exactly going out on a shaky limb, but there were some people bashing the defense a few weeks ago, and they're still getting the job done despite an ever-growing list of injuries that now includes Roquan Smith. They did a good job stepping up.
And you're mentioning Dak's stats, right? And a lot of that kind of came towards the end of the game during, we could call
time.
That garbage time, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so the Bears defense did a really good job, especially these young guys coming in and stepping in for these injured starters. They played well. You have to really give it up to them.
And that's an homage to the system, too. So you got to give some props to the coaching staff for having even the reserves ready to play.
Absolutely. So we have to talk about the special teams play, John. So it's kind of our thing here. So, and when we're talking about the special teams with the Bears, obviously Cordarrelle Patterson is the name that pops to mind. So he's playing his best football of the season, and he's also making an impact with the offense. Can you talk about Patterson, and have you submitted your vote for him to represent the NFC special teams in the Pro Bowl? 55 ticks.
I am convinced Cordarrelle Patterson is made of rubber. He makes cuts and shifts that should shatter human bones. But whether he's returning kicks or catching swing passes in the open field, this guy slices and dices defenders like a slap chop machine. He should be in the Pro Bowl. I can't see an argument against that. It's almost unfair that someone that big can be that elusive. He's 6'2", 238 pounds, and just glides down the field. He's a former first-round pick, and I know he didn't entirely live up to that in Minnesota, but I think his stint with New England last year really opened up the league's eyes as to what this guy brings to the table. He may never be a pure wide receiver, but what he is a freak athlete with a huge frame that can be used all over the field as a runner, pass catcher, and returner. This guy has over 6,000 return yards in his career. In his career, he also has 4 kickoff returns of 100 yards or more. He's averaging 30 yards per kickoff return this year, and that's best in the league by 5 yards. So this guy can flip a game in the blink of an eye, something Bears fans got used to with the likes of Devin Hester.
And Cordarrelle Patterson, it just seems like he's the best returner in the game right now. I mean, he might be the best special teamer. Looking at what he does not only as a returner, but also as a gunner, it's been really impressive. And this is the kind of player that, you know, you want to get the ball in his hands as often as you can, you know, be it on special teams or offense. And, you know, we're definitely going to see that moving forward.
And I didn't even mention his role as a gunner. He is around every punt. He is there every single time. He is a phenomenal special teams player.
Absolutely. So, John, obviously we can't gloss over the fact that the Bears have lost linebacker Roquan Smith, who was playing his best football of the season recently. In his place, Kevin Pierre-Louis played admirably with 5 tackles and 1 for a loss. Matt Nagy left open a slight possibility that Danny Trevathan might return for Sunday's game. If he doesn't, that leaves us with an inside linebacker core of Nick Kukowski, Pierre-Louis, Joel Iwe-Biniwe, hopefully I said that right, and Josh Woods. So how concerning is that for you, especially with the team playing a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who specializes in mismatches? 55 seconds, and then welcome Ryan to the show.
Well, we had something like this happen earlier in the year. I think it was the first Vikings matchup that Kwiatkowski came in and had something like 10 total tackles, and Pierre-Louis actually came into the game and played well. Robertson-Harris had a sack and a half. I remember talking about how deep this defense really is, but last week, they didn't have Akeem Hicks, Danny Trevathan, Roquan Smith for the majority of the game, no Prince Amukamara, and they still did their jobs. Now, this isn't an ideal situation. I'm not going to say that they won't be susceptible to some hiccups. The Packers and other teams are going to have some tape to look at and to see how they want to attack this pair of linebackers. Do they spread things out? Do they go sideline to sideline and make Kwiatkowski try to cover and run with receivers and running backs? Do they see a crack in Pierre-Louis's game that they want to attack? I'm not saying that having Pierre-Louis and Kwiatkowski in there is the same as having Roquan and Danny Trevathan, but as far as reserves go, I'm pretty confident in them that they can play serviceable football and show some flashes. It's not like a few years ago when you had to plug in Shea McClellan and whoever else was on that team, Dede Lattimore. I don't know why the hell that name popped into my head, but they have serviceable reserves. All right, I now want to welcome Ryan Schlipp, host of the Packernet podcast and a fanalist for Packernet.com. Ryan, I want to appreciate you being on the show. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
We're happy to have you on. It's Packer Week, big game for both squads for different reasons. Let's get rolling. We got a lot to cover with this 10-3 Green Bay Packer team. Everyone's describing their 20-15 win over the Redskins as ugly. Now, Aaron Rodgers said he wouldn't mind winning ugly all the way to the Super Bowl, but then right tackle Brian Bulaga didn't sound as satisfied. After the game, he said that the team's offense left a lot of opportunities on the field that the team has to clean up. Can you kind of break down Sunday's win against the Redskins and what made that win look ugly?
Yeah, Rodgers said what he said, but pretty much everybody on the team, including the coach, said it wasn't good enough. The bottom line is they left a lot of stuff on the field, and that's just kind of what the team has been doing a lot lately. It's getting into sync that they're just not able to do, and when it works, you can see that it looks real nice, but it's just not clicking right. And you just never really know what you're going to get from week to week, because when they get in sync, they're pretty much unstoppable. It doesn't matter who they're up against. And when they can't get in sync, it doesn't matter how bad the defense is. They don't move. So that's what we saw against Washington. That's what we saw against the 49ers. That's what we saw against the Chargers. It's it's just painful to watch. Fortunately, they were playing the Washington Redskins, which, you know, it doesn't matter how bad you are, you're probably going to win that game. But going up against a team like Chicago, which isn't a great team, but obviously a good enough defense, you can't have that, right? And even going forward with the Vikings, you definitely can't have that. And the Lions, you can't have that. So there's three games that are far from guaranteed wins if they can't get this figured out.
Now, Matt LaFleur has brought a new kind of attitude to this team. Obviously, you can't argue with the results so far as the record goes, but what is he doing that Mike McCarthy did not bring in his last few years with the team?
Well, the two biggest things that come to mind, number one, would be the locker room. There was massive dysfunction. I would detail last year how there was no, even when the team would go down and get a touchdown, which was rare in 2018, there was no smiling, no high fives. Aaron Rodgers and McCarthy weren't talking. This team is just, the locker room is brought together. The buy-in is there. Everybody is super put together. So he's done a great job in the locker room. And the second thing is, despite whatever dysfunction there might be and things maybe not looking super pretty, they find a way to win on offense and on defense. If Aaron Jones isn't going well, Jamal steps up. If Kevin King's not having a good day, Jair steps up. If the coverage isn't there, the pass rush is there. If the offense, you know, there's the yin and the yang, and somehow, some way, they find a way to win to where the team, if you look at it and just grade how they are overall, you'd say, I don't know, it's a 9-ish win team. It's a 7-ish win team. It's whatever you want to say it is. But they end up with the record that they're at. And that's why even when the team isn't looking super good, there's that confidence that they're going to find a way to win in the end. And that's something that I don't think the Packers have had in the past. Usually either they dominate or they're just going to get blown out.
Talking about Aaron Rodgers, he's 7th in touchdown passes thrown, 9th in yards, and has tossed only 2 interceptions this year. Now, obviously, those numbers indicate a pretty solid year, but, I mean, we're going on Aaron Rodgers' standards. So how would you evaluate his play so far this year?
Well, it's been pretty good overall statistically and everything else. There have been a couple games. That San Francisco 49ers game, if you're looking at Pro Football Focus, was the worst game he's ever played since he's been a starter as far as their grading system goes. This past week against Washington was the lowest grade he's had since, I don't know, 2016 or something. So, you know, it could just be an anomaly. You know, everybody has bad days once in a while. But when you got two games like that within 3 weeks, and, you know, there's also questions about what isn't working within the offense. And some people want to point at Aaron Rodgers, which obviously some people say you shouldn't do that. But there are questions about what's going on. Why is he missing throws? Why is he not throwing to wide open receivers? And there's a lot of questions. But overall, on a week-to-week basis, I think he's performing at a high level. I think he's a really good quarterback. There are still some questions. But overall, you know, he's still a top, I don't know what you want to say, that non-controversial top 10 quarterback.
We're talking to Ryan Schlipp, host of the Packernet podcast. I want to switch over to Aaron Jones. What's the deal with the Packers running back? Sunday he had 9 carries for 101 yards, and then a week before that he had 11 carries for 18 yards. What's behind some of the inconsistency with him? Is that play calling, or is that just inconsistent play?
I really put it on the offensive line. In the days where it's not working, usually he's just getting wrapped up as soon as he touches the ball. And it's like anything else with the offense, it's based on rhythm. When he's going, he's just going to keep on going. As much as you give him the ball, he's just going to keep going. But on days where the offensive line can't quite block, and look, this is a Mike McCarthy offense that Matt LaFleur is trying to run, and that is part of the complication. And Mike McCarthy never wanted to run the ball. He just wanted to pass. So the offensive line he built, they're great pass blockers. They have no idea what run blocking even is. So this is kind of a new thing for them to try to figure this out. And plus, it's a different running scheme. So, yeah, there are some hiccups to where Aaron Jones doesn't really get going. But again, when he gets going, and the biggest issue with Aaron Jones has always been opportunities. They very rarely feed him the ball. Even this year under Matt LaFleur, he's not getting probably as many opportunities as he should. But as a general rule, he's just a great running back. And the more opportunities you give him, the more he's going to hurt the other team.
You talked about the offensive line's ability to pass block. How well is that pass blocking in general? And are there any weaknesses that, you know, the Bears could potentially take advantage of come Sunday?
Billy Turner. That's the one you're going to pick on a lot. I think you're getting Hicks going this week and Khalil Mack. You know, if he starts stunting to the inside toward Billy Turner, who is our right guard, that's where the complications have been. Brian Bulaga's having one of the best years he's had at right tackle. David Bakhtiari, again, run blocking is a major weakness, but as a pass blocker, he's still a top five tackle. Elton Jenkins, as a rookie, has been really solid at left guard. Corey Linsley's a good center. Billy Turner, who we brought in and paid a huge chunk of money to, has really been struggling to get acclimated. So that's going to be probably your best bet in terms of getting to Aaron Rodgers.
We're talking to Ryan Schlipp, host of the Packernet podcast here on Buffon 55. Ryan, if I took a quick look at the Packers wide receiving core and their production, that appears to be an issue. In the last six games, there's only been one game where a Packers wideout has exceeded 50 yards receiving. Can you kind of evaluate that unit for us?
Yeah, I mean, the general game plan that's pretty effective for taking away the Packers is stack the box, take away Devontae, and that's pretty much it, because what else can the Packers do? Now, the weeks in which the Packers do well is when somebody steps up, and that's usually been kind of working out. They don't have a number two, but they have enough guys that somebody's bound to step up and kind of act as a number two that week to play to that level. Alan Lazard has been pretty good the last couple weeks. You know, Geronimo maybe pops up for a week, but if there's a week in which it's Devontae and nobody, they can't get the pass game going, and then you just have the defenses doing that same thing. They stack the box to make sure Aaron Jones can't go. They pay a little extra attention to Devontae, and then just dare Aaron Rodgers to throw it, which seems counterintuitive, but I think teams have been doing that for years. Play press man coverage, stack the box, and dare them to throw, and it works.
One position that seems to be producing a little bit more this season is the tight end position. Jimmy Graham seems to have turned some things around. How has he and Mercedes Lewis kind of turned around the production at the tight end position for the Packers?
It's been pretty inconsistent. I know Jimmy Graham got going a little bit last week. You know, it's not what we wanted, as far as, especially when you consider the contract that he's being paid. It's nowhere near the level of production. He is another one of those guys that on occasion can pop up. Mercedes Lewis is primarily a blocker. He's you know, last week he was phenomenal in that. And in this Matt LaFleur system, that's going to be really important to spring Aaron Jones. So that's going to be his primary role. Jimmy Graham, that's somebody. And Aaron Rodgers absolutely loves tight ends. He wants nothing more than Mercedes Lewis and Jimmy Graham to be the focal point of this offense. But trying to get that to go is kind of been somewhat problematic. They're not fully in sync. But yeah, they're trying to emphasize that. And Matt LaFleur also wants to get the tight ends going, but I kind of think they're trying to get something to go that just isn't really there anymore. I think Jimmy Graham is kind of at the tail end, and, you know, the stats are maybe a little bit misleading because it's not a super great situation.
Let's switch sides of the ball now. A ton of sacks between Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. A lot of production there. Can you talk about their ability to also, are they effective stopping the run? We see the sacks, but I think the 21 and a half between them. Are they effective at stopping the run as well?
Yes, but inconsistent. I think Preston, when he came over from Washington, that was his massive asset. He was a great run defender, kind of iffy as a pass rusher. Now, obviously, this year he's really shining as a pass rusher, but isn't quite, you know, week to week he might come in one week and really dominate in that area, and then other times not so much. It's a weakness for the defense as a whole, and it's that same kind of inconsistency thing. Last week, Za'Darius did a great job against the run, but as a whole, he doesn't do very well in that. Kenny Clark has really been struggling against the run. Preston Smith, you know, he's probably the better run defender, but he's also been struggling. So it's sort of a surprising weak point for those two guys, I would say, is the ability to stop the run.
Now, while we're on the subject of the defense, this has been a hot topic, I'm sure, around Packerland. Can you give us the lowdown on top draft pick Rashawn Gary? Has he improved play at all?
Yeah, but it's such a small sample size, and Packer fans are not happy that he's not on the field as much, and some guys just will not stop trashing the guy, which is ridiculous. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he's not getting opportunities, number one, because Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith are the starters. And Kyler Fackrell, as much as everyone likes to poke fun of him, is getting a pressure rate at about 15%, which is higher than 90% of the pass rushers in the NFL. So he's number four on this team. He's getting 11 opportunities in a game. I don't know what exactly people are expecting. For example, I think he had four pass rush opportunities in this last game, and he got a pressure in one, which is 25%. One pressure isn't great, but I don't know what you want from a guy when he gets four attempts. So he's not where anybody wants him to be. He's all tools, and he needs to be developed. And I think given the situation with having as good a situation at on the edge as we have, we have the luxury of being patient with him, and we should just take that opportunity to be patient and not trash the guy as he's slowly trying to develop and learn the position.
We talked about the Bears inside linebackers earlier. Let's talk about the Green Bay inside linebackers, Blake Martinez and B.J. Goodson. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? Are they better in pass, or are they better at defending the run?
I'm not sure what the strengths are, to be completely honest with you. You know, Blake was, at one point, maybe 2 years ago, he was pretty solid against the run. Last year, he actually flashed as in coverage. He kind of grew in that area, but really regressed against the run. This year, there's just, there's really nothing really there. You know, the stats are still there as far as tackles, if you care about that, but you shouldn't. He's very, very hesitant. You know, that was one of the things I really admired when I watched the Bears-Packers game. Blake was hesitant, and then you watch the Bears linebackers, and they're just so aggressive, and they're so quick, and they flow so fast, and I was so envious, because Blake basically stands there and waits to figure out what you're going to do, and then he chases you from behind and tackles you and drags you down after seven. It's the most frustrating thing in the world to watch. It's not a great area for the Packers in any way. I mean, he'll make the tackle, but it's not going to be tackled behind the line of scrimmage. There's not going to be a lot of aggression, and it's a weak point. It's something that the Bears are going to be able to probably exploit, whether it's running the ball or trying to exploit that in the passing game.
Let's move back to the secondary now. Allen Robinson is the Bears' leading pass catcher. He has 4 Trubisky's last 7 touchdown passes. Who's going to cover him for the Packers? And tell us about the cornerback and safety positions in general.
It's probably going to be Jair. He's the Packers' number one guy. The biggest question I have, and I don't actually know the answer at this point, but Kevin King was hurt last week. He's hurt constantly. It's a shock that he's made it this long. It's a shoulder injury, which is the same thing that's plagued him the last 2 years, so this may be something serious. I don't actually know. If that's the case, you know, and they don't really play shadow coverage, so it's going to be a little bit of everything. But Jair is the number one guy, so they're probably going to put him mostly on Allen Robinson. Otherwise, it'll be Tremont Williams, who, although being like 46, 56, however old he is, he's actually playing at a pretty high level. Chandon Sullivan is going to be the guy in the slot. If Kevin King is there, as far as the size dimensions, you know, he's a big guy, he's a fast guy. I wouldn't be surprised if Kevin King plays a little bit on Allen Robinson. But, you know, I'm as people know, not super high on Kevin King. Look for an ability to exploit him if he's on the field, especially on the deep passes.
Now, a guy that Bears fans are very familiar with, Adrian Amos, he has 2 interceptions this season. That means he's 1 away from matching his career total with the Bears. Can you assess his play for the Packers and that of Darnell Savage, who the barroom scouts were really high on when evaluating draft picks?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. During the process, Adrian Amos was real high on my list as far as guys that I wanted. I think he fits the profile of what Mike Pettine was looking for as far as kind of getting away from guys who have elite attributes but kind of are weak in certain areas. You know, Za'Darius and Preston, they're bigger, stronger. They can do a little bit of everything. Adrian Amos is kind of that guy. You know, he's not Earl Thomas as a cover guy, but he's also really solid as a tackler, against the run, in coverage, and that's what he's been all year. He's been just consistent. He's not one of those guys that you're just throwing your hands up going, what are you doing? He's just been solid. And last week, I think, was one of his best weeks as far – I mean, he was. He was the highest-graded player on the defense, which is great to see. Darnell Savage, he started off the year real hot. He actually got injured and kind of had a little bit of a rough patch. Not terrible, but, you know, rookie stuff. And the last couple weeks, he's also been really solid. And, yeah, coming out of college, he was real fun to watch with that athleticism, that speed. You know, as he is now, he's fine. If he can develop, he's one of the guys I'm the most excited about, obviously, Za'Darius excluded, for this defense.
Talking to Ryan Schlipp, host of the Packernet podcast. Ryan, we always finish this part of the interview by asking about special teams play. Anyone having a particularly good season on the Packers special teams unit? That could be a gunner, a returner, a kicker, a punter, anybody that the Bears fans should be aware of going into Sunday?
Well, we do now, as of last week, have positive punt return yards. So
oh, wow.
you gotta watch out for that. We are now in the black, so that's great. They learned how to run forward, so, you know, yeah, we better watch out for that.
Baby steps, Ryan.
Well, we're getting there. No, but, I mean, Mason Crosby's a good kicker. J.K. Scott, we did draft. He's got a lot of potential as far as flipping the field. I mean, he has the ability to kick a 60-yard punt with 5-second hang time, but we haven't seen that in a while. So I would say it's as far as special teams, you don't have a whole lot to worry about. Don't Well, I'm not going to jinx it, so I'm not going to say anything, but they're fine as they are.
Fair enough. Alyssa, how's the mob doing in the chat room? Are they behaving? Do they have any questions for Ryan?
Well, it is Packers week, so make of it what you will. So I do have three questions for you, Ryan. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay, so let's start off. We want to know if you had to summarize the Packers' weaknesses, right? So how are the Bears going to beat the Packers? What would you say are the Packers' biggest weaknesses?
Weaknesses are going to be consistency. To kind of tie it together with how the Bears are going to win, I would say it's the ability to I shouldn't say finish because of the record, but if I were to give advice to the Bears, it would be to hang on. Because the Packers have a tendency to go up early, right, to really show off, and then they stall out. And the defense, likewise, has the ability to kind of really be impressive at the start, and then the dam breaks open. The Bears need to be ready to strike at the end of the game when the offense doesn't have any more answers and the defense can't stop anymore to be able to really hit the gas and accelerate. Because that's what the Packers have been doing, is to go up high enough, and then in the end when things are kind of falling off, make that one play at the end to just make sure you don't win. The Bears need to find a way to get over the hump and actually score that last touchdown and win the game and not let the Packers defense close this thing out.
So does anyone in Packerland miss former GM Ted Thompson and Coach Mike McCarthy?
I don't think so. No, I mean, respect maybe, but nobody misses him. No, I mean, Brian Gutekunst is a good GM. Ted Thompson hadn't really drafted well in a long time, and with him doing nothing in free agency, that really irked a lot of people. And Mike McCarthy, that thing had completely run its course. Again, all the respect in the world, but the guy had no desire to innovate or get with the times, and the locker room had completely fallen apart. So no, nobody misses them.
And before we let you go, I have to get your prediction for the game. So what do you think, Ryan?
Well, 24 seems to be a magic number. So I'm going to say the Packers 24, and I think it's going to be down to the wire. So I'll just say 24-20 Packers.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, I want to thank you so much for your time. Can you please tell our audience where they can find your work and interact with you on social media?
Absolutely. Our website is packernet.com. I have a daily podcast, which is the Packernet Podcast. And on Twitter, you can find me pack_daddy.
All right. That's Ryan Schlipp, host of the Packernet Podcast. Ryan, thanks again. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot. Good talking to you.
Okay, John, that music signifies one thing. It's time for the second half of our B55 questions. And I, for one, am very glad that Ryan took the Packers because we are avoiding a kiss of death for the second straight week.
Yeah, as long as our guests keep picking their own team, that's fine by me. It's very great analysis there by Ryan, though. He knows that team inside and out.
Absolutely. I feel like we know the Packers a little bit better, though we do know them fairly well, obviously, playing them two times a year.
I'd say so.
Okay, so let's get to our next set of questions, John. So, the Bears' playoff chances took a big hit with the Rams beating the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football. So, as you look at the Vikings and the Rams and their remaining games, how would you characterize the Bears' chances of getting the needed help that they must have to sneak into the playoffs, obviously, if they win out? 55 seconds, any 10.
Okay, so when it comes to things I have no control over, like sports, I tend to dwell on them. I don't dwell on things I can control, but for the things that I can't control, I tend to dwell. It's a problem. I'm working on it. Well, I'll get help. But I dwelled on the Giants' loss for a long time last year because that was the difference in getting a first-round bye in the playoffs. Now I'm dwelling on the Raiders and Chargers' losses. If they win those, even if just if they win one of those, things are so different right now. I'm trying to work past this. But now it's possible that the Bears could go 10-6 and still miss the playoffs. The Rams have the Cowboys, Niners, and Cardinals. The Bears need them to lose two of those games. So maybe the Cowboys and Niners can knock them off. The Vikings have the Chargers and Packers before they play the Bears in week 17. They need to lose one of those two games, either the Chargers or the Packers. If that happens and the Bears do beat the Packers, Chiefs, and Vikings, they're in. Now, they could technically get in at 9-7, but the Rams would have to lose out, and so would the Vikings. I don't love the odds, but there's a chance. There's a chance.
I mean, let's call it like it is. The Bears' playoff chances, they're on life support right now. I think it's about 2% or between 2 and 3 now after both the Vikings and Rams won on Sunday. But you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, it's just like you. I feel like I'm clinging to hope until I can't anymore, right? I'm like looking at every possible scenario, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, even if they win one, you know, then they have to lose three and all that stuff. So until like they're, you know, mathematically eliminated, I'm trying to hold on to the hope. I mean, it sucks it's taken this long, but, you know, it is nice to be playing meaningful football in December.
There's life, yes.
There is life. So as recently as 4 weeks ago, we talked about the possibility of replacing Mitch Trubisky in 2020 or bringing in some competition. But since the Thanksgiving Day game, he's had three games where he's thrown three touchdowns and he's added two rushing touchdowns over that span. The Bears, John, are 4-1 in those games. So where is your Trubisky trust level at? You have 55 seconds.
This team and its players will always toy with my emotions. They will build me up just to crush me. And as I lay in rubble, they will slide in a glimmer of hope that make me want to rebuild my confidence. There's no denying that Mitch has gotten better. He's doing things that we thought he'd be doing all year. I'm glad there are three games left. That will prove if this level of play is sustainable. But when it's all said and done, I think there will be a notable move at quarterback. And maybe it's not as far as bringing in a new starter like trading for Cam Newton, but I can see them bringing in a veteran to push Trubisky a little bit. Maybe someone like an Andy Dalton or Mariota or even Alex Smith if he decides to come back. Some of these guys thrive in new systems and surroundings. Look at Tennessee. Ryan Tannehill comes in as the backup, gets thrown in, and now he's putting up some of the best stats of his career. But I think there will be a little push on Mitch next year, but he was going to be on the roster anyway. So if he continues to play like this, they can probably say with confidence that he'll at least be the starter going into the 2020 offseason and training camp, but who knows?
And I mean, depending on how Mitch plays in these last three games, I feel like that kind of, you know, dictates, you know, what kind of quarterback they bring in, right? You know, are they going to just, you know, bringing in a backup to replace Chase Daniel, whose contract's up after this year, or are they bringing in someone to start? You know, obviously the Panthers are looking to trade Cam Newton. I don't know if Cam's coming to Chicago, you know, but, you know, so depending on how he plays these last three games, you know, I want to trust him, you know, but I need to continue to see the consistency, and I want to see him continue to play strong against, you know, the competition as it gets tougher. You know, obviously the Packers, the Chiefs, the Vikings, those are all teams with winning records headed to the playoffs. Hopefully not the Vikings, though. But, you know, I don't expect perfection from him, but I want to continue to see that he can consistently, produce and, like, be a good quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, these three games are going to speak volumes about what they might want to do. Do they bring in a guy that is just going to be, you know, the very average veteran that can maybe push Trubisky and Camp a little bit, or do they want to make a splash, or do they go to there, or do they try to draft somebody? I mean, I think the end of the season will kind of dictate that.
And we shall see starting Sunday. So, you know, we've talked about the absence of Roquan Smith, you know, but there is some good news in that Akeem Hicks looks like he's going to return on Sunday if everything goes according to plan. So what does a healthy Akeem Hicks mean to this defense, especially with Roquan's injury? Take it away.
I've said this before, but Akeem Hicks brings so much more to the field than gameplay. He's a vocal leader on the defense. He's an intense guy, and I think guys want to play better when he's on the field. I would run through a wall for Akeem Hicks and then throw in the fact that he's one of the best defensive linemen in the game. He's an absolute monster. The run defense is better when he's in. The pass rush is a lot better as well. I also want to see what effect this might have on Khalil Mack. I want to see how Hicks, he affects the pocket, disrupting the pocket, could push the quarterback to a different side. We'll see if Khalil Mack can pounce. And if they can get a push from the D-line, maybe that forces the ball out quicker and those reserve linebackers don't have to tail receivers for as long as they would. If they can disrupt things up front, that will take a ton of pressure off Pierre Lewis and Kwiatkowski. We'll see if this also has an effect on Leonard Floyd. I feel like I kind of say that every week. Maybe this week it'll be true. Maybe Leonard Floyd has three sacks and a forced fumble, and perhaps I am a dreamer.
I mean, hey, Leonard Floyd plays best ball against the Packers, so.
Yeah, well, maybe.
But no, like you were saying, the return of Akeem Hicks, it means everything to this team. You know, we always, you know, rightfully talk about Khalil Mack's impact on this defense, you know, but Hicks has, you know, just as big of an impact, especially in the middle of that defense, you know, on the field and off the field. You know, so if he returns, which it looks likely, you know, that's going to be huge for this team.
Yeah, I think guys around Hicks, when he's on the field, he brings a different energy. Guys just want to play better, and they do play better when he's around.
Absolutely. So now, John, though, we got the lowdown from Ryan about this Packers team. What areas do you think favor the Bears in this matchup? Please begin now.
Well, they're 21st in passing defense. Let's see how Nagy and Trubisky feel like attacking that. Maybe we see more receivers get in open space and make things happen. They're 25th in rushing yards per game, so wouldn't it be sweet to see the Bears come out, own the line of scrimmage, and pound the ball down the field? So I think there will be some opportunities. On the other side, the Packers' offense isn't exactly a juggernaut. They're only averaging 23.8 points per game. Now, I know that sounds silly for me to say, given the Bears only score about 18 points per game, but I'm just saying there will be chances to win the game. I think these teams look pretty different than they did back on September 5th. Crazy to think it was that long ago. But, you know, Trubisky was sacked 5 times and only ran the ball 3 times for 11 yards in that game. I expect to see improvements in both of those statistical categories. The Bears couldn't run to save their lives in the first game. They almost have to have a better game. The entire team had 15 carries for 46 yards. I'm praying that number goes up. But Allen Robinson had over 100 yards in that game, so maybe he has another big game. I'm just thinking there are opportunities to win this.
Definitely. And it feels like a lifetime ago, or like a season has passed since they played that season opener. Obviously, a lot's changed. But, you know, looking at how the Bears defense really handled Aaron Rodgers, held them to that one touchdown. And, you know, it was a deep pass that, you know, just blown coverage shouldn't have happened. But, you know, and then on offense, obviously completely different. The Bears, you know, obviously we need to see how Trubisky responds. You know, especially this was the defense that broke him at the start of the year, you know. Is that something that's going through his head? But hopefully not, you know. So I think this is going to be a big, big test for Mitch in this offense.
I think that if he can find the weak spots like we heard Ryan talk about earlier, I think that he can have success against this Packers defense.
Okay, and so earlier before you were talking about Leonard Floyd and got this question in the chat room. So do you think Leonard Floyd will show up for this game, especially considering how he typically does against the Packers?
I can't say with confidence that he will, but I mean, he did play well against the Packers in week one. There will be opportunities with Akeem Hicks back in there, Khalil Mack. I've been saying this for 2 years that with Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks in there, that should open up lanes and open up opportunities for Leonard Floyd. Why he isn't eating more, I don't know. But if he's going to come out, I would prefer it to be this week. So I would like to see some production this week. Flash some of that athleticism. Let's see some of those different moves that he was showing. He used a power move against the Packers line in week one. He actually just bull rushed somebody, which we didn't see a whole lot of out of Leonard Floyd's arsenal. So I would love to see some more of that. But maybe. I can't say with a whole ton of confidence that this is going to be a big game for Leonard Floyd.
Maybe Floyd should do some like visualization exercises where he just pictures every week that he's playing the Packers, and then maybe we can get a solid season out of him.
Got to send him some literature just to get into the right mind.
Absolutely. So, John, it's Packers week, obviously. So before you share your prediction for the game, I want you to talk to us about what a win against the Packers would do for this team's psyche. And do you subscribe to the theory that a victory against the Packers makes up for all of the team's flaws this year? The clock is off, my friend.
Well, look, there have been years where the Bears struggled and the playoffs weren't ever really a possibility. So in those years, yeah, beating the Packers would act as the highlight. Now, don't get me wrong, I can't stand the Packers, and I've said this before. My hate is derived from their success against the Bears and basically overall success for the past 20 years, minus a few bright spots like last year's division-clenching win at home. But I don't know if a win over the Packers really makes up for all the flaws this year, because this team has Super Bowl aspirations, and the odds say they are likely to miss the playoffs, although we're holding on to hope. But if the Bears ultimately do miss the playoffs, it would be a much easier pill to swallow if we knew they threw a wrench into Green Bay season. As for their psyche, like I said earlier, this is probably the next step. They were able to win 2 straight games against bad teams in Detroit and New York, and they were able to beat a potential playoff team in Dallas. You know, say what you want about Dallas, but they're better than the other 2 teams that I talked about. Now they're going on the road against a division leader trying to get a first-round bye somehow. Packers are not winning this game. Gets back some of that swagger that they had and then lost. This game will absolutely speak volumes. All right, every week I give you my prediction to the game, and just like the Bears, I'm teetering on, you know, success and non-success, not even a word. I must have hit my head when I fell off that out of the tree stand. Although, they did prove me wrong last week. This week, Everything's on the line. Aren't we due for a big win? Aren't the Bears due for a huge statement win? I'm letting my guard down a little bit this week. I'm putting myself out there. I'm saying, world, this is my blood. It's red, just like yours. So love me. I hope somebody got that Office reference, or that's going to sound really, really awkward to anybody listening. Anyway, I think the Bears win on an Eddie Pinheiro game-winning field goal by a score of 26-23. Once again, I want to thank Ryan Schlipp, host of the Packernet Podcast, for being our guest tonight. Remember, follow me on Twitter at JD Buffon, and make sure you are following the Barroom on Twitter at Bears Barroom, or visit the Facebook page. Alyssa, can you tell our listeners where they can find your work and contact you on social media?
You can find my work over at BearsWire.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Alyssa Barbieri. And John, before I let you go, how is your fantasy football team doing?
In the playoffs? I am.
Yes. Nicely done. So coming up next. Oh gosh. Well, you know, well then you're going to want to stay tuned, because coming up next, we've got Fantasy Football Goon, where we're going to be getting you ready for your fantasy football playoffs. That will be followed by Shy Fans in the Stands with host Joe Mandel and Greg Braggs, who welcome Matt Karstensen for some nerdy Bears talk. So those shows, like all of our live shows, are available on podcast format. So make sure you subscribe to the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
That's right. And sign up on our Mixler.com channel for email updates on all of our live shows. We'd love to have you in our chat room. It's all absolutely free to sign up for. Hope you join us live and interact. And if you listen to the podcast version of this show, please leave us a review. That helps us out immensely. But that will do it for us this week. Enjoy the game. It's Packers week, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Another brilliant show. Congratulations, you two. Well done.
Oh, kind, Aldo.
Thank you.
Was good. And Ryan was a sensational guest. We are on our overtime segment. We've got 15 minutes before the Fantasy Football Goon starts. So you guys want to talk a little more?
Yeah, I got 15 minutes. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
All right. I love where... Everything you covered about the Packers with Ryan was outstanding. I almost thought that he was going to pick the Bears to win this game, given how he was talking about this team. Did you get that sense?
Absolutely.
For as good as their record is, he made them seem incredibly average, which made me feel good. But I don't know, because you know there's a reason they have those wins, and he talks about, you know, the difference in attitude with, you know, with LaFleur there as opposed to McCarthy, and everybody's on the same page and everyone likes each other and fist bump and all that happy chemistry stuff. So I mean, that does play a role, but it sounds like there are definite weaknesses here to take advantage of.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I got a clip of Dave Ragone talking about Mitch Trubisky's performance against the Cowboys and his confidence level and kind of his assessment on how he's grown. I thought we could listen to that and then maybe comment on what Ragone says. He's, of course, the quarterback coach for Mitch Trubisky. Take a listen.
All right, first drive of the last game. Okay, he throws an interception. He comes to the sideline. I've been through this before. Different look. Goes right back out there. The defense does an unbelievable job getting this ball back. He goes right back out there and leads the rest of the game the way that, as if that pick never happened. And again, that comes with time. I'm not sure anybody's timetable, but his own. And that was a great sign. Of all the signs that happened that game to me, as his position coach, that was the most important. How is he going to react to an interception in the red area, in which he's been good in the red area? And then obviously he bounced back, and the confidence, if anything, didn't waver, it grew throughout that game. And again, we're all, especially for myself, I'm looking for those type of signs from a maturity standpoint, from a mental standpoint, not just the physical part of it. To see where he's potentially going in his career.
Doesn't that seem to be the issue with Mitch Trubisky is simply confidence and, you know, thinking about the next play after he's made a mistake? If I posted a play on the @BearsBarroom Twitter account from earlier this season against – the Saints, where he it was a read option. He failed to give the ball to Montgomery, who I think would have picked up positive yards running up the middle. He had an open receiver to the left. He had an open receiver to the right. He hesitated in his throw, and he was sacked. You know, and you just, and the rest of the game, he was not very good. And so, you know, it just seems like what this young man needs is maturity and confidence. You guys agree with that?
Well, yeah, and I think we saw when competent Mitch is out there, we see quick reactions, quick decision-makings, and decision-making. He's going to need that again this week. I just read in the chat room, I think it was Ed Biggs said that the Packers are going to crowd the line, make him make quick reads. I believe that. I think they're going to try to rattle Mitch early just because I think they're going to try to do the same thing they did last time.
Yep.
I think that's going to probably be their recipe to again going into Sunday. So we need to see confident Mitch. If a read option is not there or your first couple reads aren't there, take off and run. He did not run nearly as much as he should have in that first Packers game, and he could have, you know, turned something into a first down. I don't care if you want to, you know, you want to prove that you're a good quarterback in the pocket. Pick up a first down. Your job is to, you know, win the game. Do whatever it takes. So if we see him, you know, react and just go and, you know, maybe shake off some bad throws. He didn't. The head wasn't really hanging too much against the Cowboys. He was, I think, in tune and focused the entire time. And, you know, I know that you can't put that on a stat book and you can't really have analytics for that, but I think it's a real thing, and it's visible. You can see that. So you need to see confident Mitch come out firing on Sunday.
Listen. Yeah, and comparing, like, the Trubisky we saw week one against the Packers to last week against the Cowboys, it's night and day, and it's a confidence thing. You know, that first game, like I said before, it seemed to break him. You know, he came into the season, you know, Nagy saying, okay, you got this, you're football 202. And then he went with that performance and he just, like, his confidence was shot. And, you know, it's taken some time for him to kind of get back there. And kind of going back with what Ragone was saying about, you know, throwing the pick and then bouncing back, this is the second week in a row we've seen that, you know, where he's not letting the mistakes, you know, get to him. He's not overthinking it. It's like, okay, I made a bad play. Let's go back out and let's score this time.
Listen, you're the only one here who's actually talked to him. I think you've interviewed him twice now, right?
Yeah.
And what was your sense when you talked to him? Did you get the sense of, you know, wow, this guy's just a kid? Or did you get the sense, you know, that, you know, what was your sense of him?
No, like John was saying, I still think that there's some, you know, maturity that needs to happen. It does feel like he's still a very young player. I know that, you know, can't make excuses him being in his third year, but he's still, you know, kind of taking everything in and he's still learning. You know, we always knew it was going to take, you know, a little longer for him to develop, and quarterbacks, you know, quarterback development isn't linear. So, you know, and we've seen this with some of the, you know, Drew Brees took a little bit of time, you know, even Peyton Manning took a little bit of time, but, you know, I still feel like he's a kid that's, you know, growing.
Right. Shane sent me something that I think was posted in theathletic.com where they did an analysis of Drew Brees' first three seasons and Mitch Trubisky's first three seasons, and the stats are, like, identical. It's really eerie how close the stats are. So, yeah, I mean, you know, some quarterbacks are going to take a while, and I was always of the opinion that Trubisky needed to sit the entire first season of his rookie year, but unfortunately, Ryan Pace hired Mike Glennon to be the quarterback, so it only took one game for
him. That wasn't going to happen. Right. The moment he did that, that was not going to happen.
That's right. After watching the first game, I said, you know, maybe they should bring Grim Mitch for the second game. So what do you think, John? Do you think that, you know, he would have benefited more from maybe sitting a season and watching things from the sideline?
Well, what the hell was he going to learn in John Fox's offense? Or, you know, all he did was, you know, run pass anyway. So it's not in Lyle Doggins there, you know, not knowing what the hell he's doing. So, I mean, it's maybe a year watching Nagy's offense would have been a little bit better. But I think you and I talked about this last year, Aldo, where we talked about how long it took Alex Smith to progress into a serviceable quarterback. Yeah. Not even serviceable, but a good quarterback, a very, very good quarterback.
Right.
And he had a slew of coordinators. He bounced around, and he eventually he started playing really well towards his tail end career in San Francisco and then started playing really well in Kansas City. So is that another one of these situations, and are the Bears – going to be okay being that patient if he's not, if it's not going to click until year four or five? Do you pick up that fifth year option? And then, I mean, after year five, you either get rid of him or you pay him. Now, I don't know what they want to do in that situation. So, I guess they could franchise tag him. Could they go that route? I guess.
Yeah, they could go that route. That would make him, you know, among the, you know, top five paid quarterbacks. So that's a lot of money. But, you know, I just keep coming back to, I'm the old fart here. So I remember where even, you know, top draft picks usually sat out a year and they were groomed into the NFL. And that doesn't happen, you know, hardly that much. I mean, Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years behind Brett Favre. And it was always considered the way to groom a young quarterback, and that rarely happens now. They're thrown into the fire a lot faster. Chubbs in the chat room just said, you know, now you've got social media. So, and I know Mitch stays off social media for a while, but, you know, he hears stuff that's going on. He's felt the pain of the entire city and the media complaining about him and criticizing him, which is why he made the comment, I'm going to turn off the TV sets and Alice Hall, you know, and so
keep them off.
Yeah, please keep them
if
off.
If it's working, Mitch, keep them off.
Exactly. And so I think he's got a very delicate psyche. And I think that's what Dave Ragone was basically talking about, that, you know, the kid has to toughen up. You know, he needs to drink some of the same kind of whiskey I'm drinking tonight and go out there and
send
just
a bottle.
Yeah, I should send him a case of Four Roses.
Well, although you talk about, you know, how quarterbacks used to, you know, sit for 2-3 years. Could this be the way that things are now, though, isn't that kind of a testament to how teams are being built now with the economic landscape of the NFL, where teams want to strike when the iron's hot and they have their quarterback on a rookie deal and they can bring in defensive players like Khalil Mack and they can put a lot of money into the O-line or the D-line or wide receivers, and then they can kind of get that bargain price at a quarterback, and so they can try to have that window of opportunity where they can win before they got to give the quarterback, you know, $100 million to $150 million. Isn't that not pushing teams to throw their first-round picks in there a lot sooner?
You ain't kidding. That's exactly correct. And unfortunately, it makes for what's happened with the Chicago Bears, and you see it with other teams. I mean, you look at Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray. He's not ready to be an NFL starter. I'm sorry. This guy was, you know, has played more baseball than he's played college football, I think. And so this guy would have definitely benefited from some time, you know, working behind a veteran quarterback and having that mentorship. But that just doesn't happen in today's NFL. And you're absolutely right, John. The economics of the game has changed, you know, how the way teams develop and strategize, and I think it hurts the overall NFL product to do it that way, but that's the unfortunate reality. Quarterbacks just are the stars of the game, and they get more praise than they deserve sometimes, and they get more money than they deserve sometimes, and you're seeing quarterbacks making absurd salaries who just don't deserve it. I mean, we can go back, you know, some people might argue this, but Jay Cutler, you know, he got that huge deal with the Bears, and a lot of people were upset about it, but that's the NFL.
And that's what it presses teams into doing, because at the time, you think about, okay, well, if you don't extend Cutler, what's your alternative? Because there's only so many good quarterbacks out there. Yep. And I mean, we can do hindsight 2020 all we want, and I wasn't necessarily thrilled about the contract. I mean, I think it was more the length that bothered me, but what was the alternative? I think that they thought they maybe had a competitive team, and if you want to start all over by maybe drafting a guy, and then there's absolutely no guarantee with that. So, you know, getting this quarterback thing, although some teams make it look easy, it's not, and, you know, some teams make it look really hard, like the Bears do sometimes. Yeah. So it's you know, it can make or break you. It can set you back 3 years. It can set you back 5 years, and absolutely, sometimes 7 years.
I contend that the original sin for Ryan Pace was not bringing in a new coaching staff and searching for a new young developmental quarterback in his very first year. Hell, he could have drafted Dak Prescott in I think his first draft or second draft, and that would have, you know, the Cowboys picked Prescott up in the fourth round. So if you could have got him before the Cowboys did, you know, whether they had the earlier pick in the fourth round or a third round pick, that would have been an excellent developmental pick to have behind Cutler for a year. And you know, the whole complexion of this franchise would have been totally different. But Pace, you know, didn't bring in his own guys. I don't think John Fox is really his guy. We've heard that story.
No. And, you know, I think, and we talked about this, the whole thing where, and now I'm not saying this is necessarily on Ryan Pace, but maybe the Bears in general, where they try to be, you know, that splash move with Trestman, you know, thinking outside the box. They're going to go get the, you know, the egghead, the guy who has all the numbers, the guy who has all the clipboards, the guy, the crazy guy from Canada is going to come down. Look how much success he's had on offense. Well, look how smart we are, thinking outside the box. And then they had to go complete role reversal and say, you know what, let's go ahead and try something a little more vanilla. Let's go get John Fox. At least he's won some games in the NFL. So, look, this isn't a crazy hire. It's not, and when they hired John Fox, I was so underwhelmed. I mean, it was incredible. I've never been so underwhelmed by a hiring in my life. It was the constant, I guess. Was anybody jazzed up about it?
Not me. I'll tell you that. I was upset, no. Really.
And we saw what we got out of that.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we got to get out of the way for the fantasy football guys, but I wanted to get Alyssa's prediction. What are you thinking? The Bears are going to win?
Oh gosh. I'm going with John. I'm right in the high, because, I mean, this is the game, right? And I feel they're a completely different team than that first week. So I'm going to go Bears 23, Packers 20. And I don't know, John, when you mentioned Eddie Pinheiro kicking the game-winning field goal, I was like,
yeah.
I was just picturing myself.
43-yarder down the pipe.
Oh, my God.
26-23.
That is pretty cool. I would love to see
that. I was just imagining, like, the sheer fear as he's lining up the kick.
Oh, yeah.
Just terror.
We've got this really cool Eddie Pinheiro song that Draft Dr. Phil produced, and we haven't been able to play it in weeks. So, please, yeah, I'd love to see that scenario. You can play it all next week. All right,
come on,
you two.
Okay.
Great job again, and the podcast will be up in about an hour.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody.
All righty. Bye.
Thank you, guys.